Welcome to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, episode 95, with Sarah Kornack and Beth Ann Schwamberger. Today on the show, we're talking with Sarah Jane Giangiralla of the Etsy shop Sweetheart Lane, where Sarah sells exclusively antique lockets. Sarah has a lot of great advice for vintage sellers. So let's get started.
You're listening to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, practical business advice for startup moms.
Today on the podcast, we are talking with Sarah Jane Giangiralla of the Etsy shop Sweetheart Lane. She sells antique lockets exclusively, and they are quite beautiful. Sarah Jane and her husband live in Marietta, Georgia, with their three-year-old son and seven-month-old daughter. Welcome to the podcast, Sarah Jane.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sarah, could you begin by telling us more about yourself, your family, and how your business got started?
Well, I would have to say, like you said, I'm married. I have two little kids that keep me very busy. But I would say my business is probably a huge answer to prayer, first of all, because I had actually the shop running for almost a year, more like a kind of a hobby thing. And when my son was less than a year, he was still a baby, maybe like 9 months, I had a lot of student debt from college. And my husband and I just kept going back and forth about me probably needing to go back to work. And I just really wanted to stay home with my kids. My mom was home with us. It was really important to me. My husband wanted me to stay home. And my shop had been kind of, you know, putzing along. And basically my husband looked it over. He's in the business world himself. He looked it over and he was like, honey, I think we can do something with this. And so we just basically focused on it with some changes and some organization and his analytical mind and my creative mind. It took off. And here we are today.
I love that. So what inspired you to sell antique lockets as your area of focus?
I mean, there's so many things about lockets, like antique lockets, that I love. I love antiques. My family loves antiques. I grew up around them. So my grandfather has one of the largest collection of student lamps from the 1800s in probably the entire United States. So for me, I mean, lockets, I love them. They're so functional. I mean, it's the best piece of jewelry because it's not just beautiful, but it's functional. You get to wear a picture inside it or a piece of hair or something. And antique lockets especially, they have so much beautiful history. And they're just better made. I mean, the stuff of today is so flimsy. Antique lockets, like I have some that they're like 110 years old and I can throw them up against a wall or my kids can chew on them and they're still fine. So I love that about them. And then also there were so many counterfeits. Like if you type in antique locket in Etsy, for example, you have like thousands that pop up that were made like yesterday. So that's why I love antique lockets.
I know that one of your main goals is to make sure you are selling only genuine antiques. Did you have previous expertise in this area to be able to spot the true antiques amongst all the reproductions?
Other than, I mean, growing, like constantly growing up around antiques, you do kind of have to have an eye, which I kind of have learned the hard way. Like if some of my friends or relatives are out at an antique show or something, they'll bring me back stuff and be like, I think this is an antique locket. I'm like, no, it's not. It's an extra truck. Oh. Yeah, I mean, it's really sweet of them, you know. But some of the things that I do to really verify their age, first of all, I have the eye because I'm used to seeing antiques, but I look for maker's marks. A lot of the lockets have like a stamp inside them. Like, for example, the Whiteman and Howe lockets, they closed in 1922. And inside every one of their locket is a little heart with a W and H co. So when I find a locket and I see that, I'm like, ah, this is not a day older than 1922 or a day younger than 1922. I also have catalogs, reproductions of antique catalogs. I love pictures of women wearing antique lockets, women and children. I love finding lockets with dates on them. So there's lots of ways you can tell, but it's also been a little bit of a learning experience. Now I'm so good since I only sell lockets. I can look at a locket and be like, oh, yeah, that was a Bliss Brothers or that was a Whiteman & Howe or whatever, just by the look. But that's generally what I do to verify that they're genuine.
That's really cool that you've become such an expert in that area with your, just with all that, the years of experience selling antique lockets. And what would you say are some of the advantages of focusing on such a narrow niche within the world of vintage and antiques?
Well, there's really advantages for both myself as a seller and as a buyer. For me, I was searching. I love Etsy myself. I love shopping on Etsy. And so I would go through as a customer and be looking for something specific. And I would hit a shop and have to scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll and look through like tons of things that were unrelated to what I wanted to find. And my philosophy for my shop has always been think like a customer. So if it bothered me, I knew it was bothering other people. And as a seller, that gives me a way to say, hey, I am the one-stop antique locket shop. It gives me credibility. It gives my customers, they can trust me. And I have a lot of customers that come back and back and back to my shop because they're loyal to me because I have become an expert on antique lockets. And I also try to sell the entire package. And that was something I wanted to say when you asked me about what inspired you to sell antique lockets. You can go to antique shows or flea markets or whatever, and you can find some antique lockets, but a lot of times the average person, and myself included, before I got into jewelry making, I would find something, but I wouldn't know how to wear it. Like, it might need a jump ring, or the hinge might be broken, or might not close properly, or it needs a chain, and I wouldn't know where to get that. So for my shop, I try to make it a haven for people that specifically get on there. They want an antique or vintage locket. They go to my shop. It's all right there. It's on a chain. It's wearable. I provide instructions on how to put the pictures in and out, how to clean it, all the stuff that you don't have to do anything else. It's there. You see it. It's verified by the age, and you buy it. That's it. So that's one advantage of just having a small niche.
It seems like you're really using that narrow niche to capitalize on the benefits of that. I'm curious. I actually like antiques myself. I like estate sales, garage sales, antique stores, all that sort of thing. And I have to say, I don't think I've come across many antique lockets when I'm just out and about at different sales and things like that.
Yeah.
How do you manage to source your lockets to make this profitable for you?
Well, I have to keep a little mystery there.
Okay.
But I do regularly go antiquing. There is a huge show down in Atlanta that I go to, and I basically dig through tons of vintage and antique things, like bags of gold-filled jewelry for treasures. And I usually come back with quite a bunch. It is hard to do, like, garage sales and whatever. I mean, I when I go home to Pennsylvania, I love Pennsylvania has great antiques. I find some there, but you do have to kind of go picking.
Does that take up a lot of time? Because there would be that time value factor involved in finding. You've got to find the product before you can even take the time to list and sell it. Does the finding part play a huge role in how much value you have to attribute to each locket?
Sort of. It does take a lot of time to find them. It really does. But again, like the big antique shows, like there's one in Springfield, Massachusetts. If you can go there with a whole bunch of cash and buy like, you know, 20, 30 lockets at a time, you can spend a day or two, and I have to do babysitting for the kids and stuff. You can come back with a lot, but you have to know what you're looking for, and you have to really pick like the picker show, like, you know, they call it picking.
That makes sense. Going to a big show and buying huge quantities at one time that you can come back and then list. That seems like a good return for your time if you can go to a big show and in one day come home with that many treasures for your Etsy shop. I could see how that time factor isn't so much of an issue.
I mean, I have gone, like, I will go, like, once a month and I will get in one day, depending on what they have. I mean, it's really, like, sometimes luck of the draw. I have gotten in the past the entire lockets for 1 month in one day.
That's impressive. And if you think about it, someone who's maybe selling a handmade item on Etsy, they would think that's amazing to get all of their products for the month, you know, done in one day. So that's pretty neat.
That's true. And if you were selling various vintage items, I could see how you would be too overwhelmed at a huge show like that. You wouldn't have
Right.
that same focus to
Right.
know what to get. So that focus allows you to come home with that month's worth of inventory.
Yeah, the focus has immensely helped my shop. It helped initially because, like I said, as a customer myself, as far as I know, I was probably the first shop on Etsy that was just focused on lockets. I think there was one other shop before me, but she had a couple other things, and she was pretty much going out by the time I got on there. So I kind of capitalized on that, and that's done well for me. And I've definitely had competitors crop up, but it's done well for me, definitely. And it's made me like obsessive about my lockets.
That's great. So, how do you determine the price of your vintage locket?
Well, the price, and this is also just a general good rule for any handmade person. Because I don't sell just the lockets. Like I said, you get locket, chain, a little packet of care instructions, a little gift bag. And a lot of times I hand make the chain. I taught myself how to make jewelry shortly after opening my shop because, let's face it, a lot of times things aren't worn the way they were back in the day. Like one of the styles in the Edwardian era was to wear a huge pendant, but very short. So that's not really like, or like something in the 1920s, something on a black cord, which a lot of people don't really want to wear. So when you're talking about prices, I put a lot of things into my lockets to bring them up to date, to make them wearable. I want to be sure that when the person buys them, they're actually going to wear them and use them and put pictures in them or hair in them or maybe have them engraved or something. So that goes into my pricing also, not just the other things, but there are some things which I wrote out a little list for you. Condition is a big issue. I want to make sure it's actually wearable and that it will close and the stones are all there, et cetera. Because some pieces make it through the past and some pieces don't, unfortunately. And then rarity. Some things, for example, pansy lockets. Pansy lockets in the antique world are super popular. Because they're rarer to find, and pansies in the Victorian language of the flowers means loving thoughts, so it's a really sweet thing to wear. Age is a huge factor. You know, I'm obviously going to charge more for a Victorian era locket that has lasted, you know, 100 plus years than I would for maybe something from World War II. And then also, of course, what I paid for them is going to have a huge factor.
That would be tough. You've got to analyze each item then to figure out that right price that makes sense.
Well, and my husband actually made out a spreadsheet for me to do some of that.
Cool.
So, which I was going to talk about in your next
Sure.
question.
Well, do you want to tell us about that now?
Sure. So, my husband, I think I said this before, but the first year I was on Etsy, I completely undersold myself. I mean, absolutely. I went on there and I was like, man, people charge a lot of money for jewelry. I want, you know, the average middle class woman to be able to own this beautiful thing, which I still do want. But once my husband got on there and analyzed my prices, and I had not factored in my Etsy fees, my PayPal fees. Now they have direct checkout on Etsy. I hadn't factored in any of that stuff. I would just like take what I paid for it and double it so that I thought that I would get like a small profit. And it came out that I was making like $3,
No, no.
$5 for something that I put a lot of time in. And then that probably wasn't even factoring in shipping costs. I try to keep my shipping really low because for me, when I shop Etsy, it's annoying to pay an arm and a leg for shipping. So my husband actually made me an Excel spreadsheet where he made basically it's called total cost of ownership, which is your total net after expenses. So I can plug in everything that I paid for the locket. I mean, even down to like each piece of wrapping wire that I use to like wrap on a pearl and the chain or something like that. The Etsy fees, the shipping costs, everything, and that's how I get my true profit. And that's been so helpful since we did that.
That's great. It's so easy to forget about all of those little things when you're pricing your products. Maybe the cost of the pretty packaging that you provide. It's so easy to forget about those little things that really start to add up fast.
Yeah.
That's nice he made it easy for you.
Yeah. And I also, and I've told, it's funny because I've told other moms this when they ask me and they tell me about their prices in their business. And I say, you know, you're doing something that, for example, I make jewelry. The average person could not make one of the necklaces I make. So I'm providing a service for them that, yes, takes me a lot of time sometimes to make those necklaces. So I don't want to undersell or undervalue what I'm doing. And for me as a customer, I mean, I have no problem paying for something that's well made that someone took the time to make that I cannot do. And my first year on Etsy, and I know a lot of other Etsy sellers, they don't value that. And I don't say that in a prideful way, but you have to put like actual like money value on your time and your effort and your certain skill.
Definitely. We definitely agree with that advice. In terms of selling vintage items on Etsy, mm-hmm. it seems like one of the extra challenges there, and you touched on this a little bit with your time and how valuable your time is, but each listing is really its own completely separate thing. You're not selling, you know, the same product over and over again. Yeah. So how do you, are there ways that you can speed up that process that make selling vintage maybe take up a little less time or a little less time to for each unique listing?
Yes. I mean, definitely antique and vintage, the best thing about it is it's usually one of a kind. And that's why it's so wonderful. But yes, I have developed over the years several tricks. One of the things that I do is I completely copy my similar listings. For example, a sterling silver World War II Bliss Brothers locket. I've had a couple of them in the shop. So what I do is I'll copy the listing. I made up like a template. If you go through my listings, you can see like age, condition, maker's mark, like up bullets. I copy the entire listing, including the tags, into the new listing. And then all I do is change the pictures, change the measurements of the actual locket, make sure that it is, for example, if it's not a Bliss Brothers, if it's a Bates & Bacon, I will copy and paste from another listing the info of the Bates & Bacon company, the years that it was closed and opened, make sure the tags are good. So I've gotten it down to where I can do an entire listing in probably a little bit under 10 minutes.
That's impressive.
That's that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So. We're both very impressed.
Very impressed.
Thank you. And I love the Etsy app on my phone too, because I can do a couple little changes on there. Like I can upload a new picture or something. That's always very handy.
What about the picture aspect of speeding up the process? Do you have a setup that's all ready to go that you can quickly snap a bunch of pictures at the same time?
That is harder. Especially after number two baby came along. That has been one of my huge challenges because it drives me nuts when I get on Etsy and I see the enough pictures in the listing, or maybe put a list pictures of a similar item like in the last couple pictures and then the first item is the different one. So I take individual pictures, five individual pictures of every single item that I list. What you see when you buy from my shop is exactly down to the clasp on the chain what you will get. So I have my mannequin and I try to do like a certain set of like two front pictures, one on the mannequin, one inside, one in the back. And I try to do, I have to kind of chase the sunlight a little bit, which is a little hard. But I try to just get those five pictures in and done and look them through. But that does take a lot of time for me, unfortunately.
What about an inventory system to help you keep track of, okay, these are coming in and these need a new chain and this one has been listed and then, oh, it's sold. How do I find the one that's sold? Do you have a system that helps you do that?
It's kind of silly and simple, but basically I have like a locked cabinet. My entire dining room is my shop room. We have an eat-in kitchen, so we just decided that I needed my own room. So all my stuff is in that room. And the great thing about selling jewelry is I can fit my entire shop minus the shipping supplies in a shoebox. So what I do basically is all the items that are in for sale, with their chains in little baggies and maybe some little like anti-tarnish paper if they need, in a box. All my items that are ready, that need to be looked over, need to be prepared, need to be cleaned, need to be fixed, etc. I just went to Michael's and bought little bead cases with individual pop-up boxes, and I have them all stored in there. So it's not really, and then in my closet I have my shipping supplies, so it's not really, when you sell jewelry, you don't have to have, like, you know, warehouses with, like, huge numbers. And my shop is usually under 100 items, so it's not too bad.
Sounds like that works well. So, Sarah, you've clearly done really well with your Etsy shop selling vintage lockets. What is the best thing that you've done that's helped you to grow your business?
One of the main things, my business has not grown. It didn't have, like, a huge leap. It was kind of a steady growth. And I sort of mentioned this before, but especially on Etsy, you must think like a customer. You must be customer-oriented. If you wouldn't want to buy something from someone on Etsy, then why would you try to sell that thing? If you are frustrated with the high shipping prices, why would you do that to a customer? If you make it very customer-oriented and how you would want to go shopping yourself, basically, like make your shop very organized, make sure you have beautiful packaging, that would be the biggest piece of advice I would give to any Etsy seller, other than obviously definitely put the details of your items in your listings, because that's a problem I see too. But you must think like a customer. You must make it customer-oriented. And Etsy kind of has a pulse. If you get on there, it's got a feel. It's got a general customer base. I mean, if you can jump on that pulse and ride it and have that customer-focused mentality, you will do well. That's one of the things that has really helped me. And my husband giving me goals.
Yeah, I wanted to circle back to that. You mentioned super early on in the interview about a year into your shop, you and your husband were talking and said, hey, I think you've got something here. I think we could make this work. And he had that you guys kind of combined forces to come up with a plan to make the Etsy shop do well. What were some of those other things that maybe you guys changed early on to improve your success?
Okay, well, like I said, the biggest thing was we had to increase our prices. We had to put value to what I was selling because I was making hardly any profit. Another thing we did, which was we attached value to every sale. You know, every sale I made, our biggest financial burden in our family was my student loans. And so basically in my mind and on paper, every sale I made, we took some of that money and said, all right, that's going to pay off the student loans. And so we attached a financial goal to everything. And that was a huge, huge help.
So speaking of, you know, attaching that financial goal or that milestone to every sale that you were making on Etsy, and I could definitely see how that would just be so motivating as you're moving forward and growing that shop. What are some other ways or some big ways that your Etsy shop has really helped your family?
The biggest way that it helped was I paid off the rest of my entire student loan. I paid it off December of last year, so December of 2014. And that was after being on Etsy for a little under 3 years. And that was a huge, I mean, it was not a small loan. That was a huge, huge answer to prayer.
That's awesome. That's definitely a huge accomplishment. I know I still have nursing school loans, so I would feel
that. Yeah,
I'm
an RN. That's what it was.
Oh, is it nursing school?
Yeah, I'm an RN.
Oh, my goodness. That's too funny.
Yeah.
My story is similar also in that I wanted to stay home once Holden came home. So a year after he came home, you know, I decided not to do nursing anymore. So, but that loan is still there.
You will get to it, I promise. Do you have an Excel spreadsheet?
I need to get one. Yes, I need to sit down with Chris. Let's get this spreadsheet going.
It's really, I mean, it's been hugely helpful, I have to say. It really has. I have one other thing you asked me about. The biggest one was thinking like a customer, I would have to say. The other thing that kind of ties into that is, and this is just, I have moms ask me, I mean, all the time, when they see that I have an Etsy shop. Most people think it's a hobby until they realize what I've done with it and where it's gone. But I have moms ask me all the time, you know, oh, how do you do this or whatever. And my husband told me something years ago that we both apply to our lives, which is don't take advice from people who have not done it for themselves. I did early on. I got some discouragement about my Etsy shop early on. And get that. And so I just want to basically encourage other moms out there that find your passion and you can do it. I have done it. You can do it. And I'm nothing special.
I love that because you're right. It's so easy, Sarah, to listen to all the naysayers that are out there, but they, like you said, if they haven't ever tried to have their own Etsy shop or a blog or any sort of business, but yet they're telling you, I don't know if you can really do this or whatever. It's like, well, why listen to those people? Why not listen to people like you who've done it, who are saying you can do it?
Yeah, I do it. I mean, I've got two little kids and I still do it and I love it. And it's been wonderful.
Certainly not easy, I'm sure. It's been a challenge, but you're doing it. It's not easy, but you're doing it. And when did you open your shop again? I don't know that we touched on that. Like, I know at first it wasn't, that first year was a gradual, but when did you first open?
I opened it about 2 months before I gave birth to my son, which was, the opening date was, I think, January 29th, 2012. I don't think I got my first listing up till like February 1st, 2012.
Okay.
So it's going on 3.5 years here.
Okay. I love all the moms who decide to start that business right before the first baby arrives.
You know, I have been thinking about it for almost a year and doing a lot of research into it, making sure that there wasn't another antique locket shop on there. The research actually led me to discover that there wasn't one, and this was something that I could get in there and jump on.
Oh, so you were researching maybe other possibilities, but landed on the fact that nobody else was focusing on the lockets?
Kind of. I mean, I kind of had like the idea buzzing around of an antique locket shop, but I wasn't really sure. Like I thought, oh, surely someone must have jumped on this. Lots of someones. And as I was looking for antique lockets myself on Etsy, I realized that there was a gap.
Awesome. Find that need and fill it.
Yes. That's exactly, yes. And that's what I love about Etsy. Find something on there that no one else can do or that not a lot of other people can do and get on it.
I like that. Just get on it.
Yep.
Well, as we wrap up, Sarah, do you have a fun or adorable mom moment that has happened with your kids recently that you could share?
Recently, I mean, there's been a lot. I have kind of a funny one that happened with my Etsy shop. When my son was, he was about 8 months, you know, one of my daily things that I do almost every day is take pictures of lockets. And, you know, you're trying to be a mom, your kid's fussing. He was sitting on the floor, fussing. And this was back before I got my mannequin, and so I had to take a picture on myself. So I just swooped him up, and I said, all right, I'm doing this to stay home with him. He's just going to be part of the shop. And I picked him up, and I took a picture, and see his little squished fat face in the side of my picture and the locket there in the center. And I did that. I had to do that for a couple of them, but they sold pretty quick. So
that's cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. That's, you know, the epitome of just being a mom with a business, being flexible and going with the flow. Well, thank you again, Sarah, for chatting with us. This has been awesome, and we've learned so much about selling vintage, and I know our listeners are going to love hearing all of your great advice. As we wrap up, where is the best place for our listeners to find you online?
It would be on Etsy, www.sweetheartlane.etsy.com. My shop is just, if you just type in Sweetheart Lane. I'm also on Facebook, same name, Sweetheart Lane.
Great. Well, we have definitely learned a lot. I'm very glad we've finally gotten the chance to talk to a vintage seller because it is very different from selling other items on Etsy. So I'm glad you're able to take the time to talk with us.
Oh, I'm happy to do it.
I wanted to be sure to mention that Sarah recently started a blog all about antique lockets. You can find her blog at antiquelocketworld.com. For the show notes, head to brilliantbusinessmoms.com/95. I just love Sarah's story about how she was able to really turn her hobby Etsy shop into a business when she got serious, when she decided that she was going to treat it like a business and not like a hobby. One great resource when you're ready to turn that hobby into a legitimate business is our Brilliant Business Planner. Whether you are an Etsy seller or a blogger, the Brilliant Business Planner has lots of business planning pages to help you really get your business on track. But supplies are limited. We are not going to be ordering any more of our 2015 planner. So if you have been thinking that you want to give the Brilliant Business Planner a try, now is the time, because we will not be reordering more copies for 2015, and the price will be going up for the 2016 planner because it will have more pages. It will be for an entire year, not just a half year like the 2015 planner. So if you are contemplating giving the Brilliant Business Planner a try, now would be the time. You can easily see all of the pages that are included in the Brilliant Business Planner on our landing page. We have this really cool flip through thing that you can take a look at an example of most of the pages that are included in the planner, so you can get a great idea of everything that's included. You can find more information on the Brilliant Business Planner by going to brilliantbusinessmoms.com/planner, and you'll get all the details there for everything that the Brilliant Business Planner includes. I've got mine sitting right here next to me with our schedule for the upcoming podcast episodes, my personal weekly schedule included, my to-do list for this week. So I have personally been enjoying using it myself, and I know Bethann has as well. I hope you're really enjoying your summer and having a great week. Now it's your turn to head out there and be brilliant.